Greetings from Podcastville. It's November 12th. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by Stance Socks. Listen, let me ask you something. Remember Christmas morning when socks were one of the worst things you could get? Times have changed. That four-pack of white gym socks from your Aunt Susan, that ain't happening anymore. Stance Socks are here to rock your Christmas morning. Incredible design and comfort. Listen, you guys know I'm on my feet a lot, and whenever I fly, I use Stance Socks. Like, I had to go to Detroit this weekend. You know you're going to be doing some fucking walking. So if you're going to be some walking, you might have some comfortable shoes and, even better, some comfortable socks. Stance Socks are incredibly comfortable. Now, here it is. Right now, just for the Church family, Stance has a great offer. Go to stance.com/church, and you'll get a free pair of socks with any purchase. That's Stance. Grab a pen. stance.com/church to get your free pair of socks. Because if they're not Stance, they're not socks. The Church of What's Happening Now is also brought to you by mybookie.ag. We're in the middle of football season. New England had the weekend off. This is your fucking chance to make some money, right? Thanksgiving's coming. You don't want to show up with a fucking duck, do you? You want to show up with a fucking turkey. You like winning money? You like betting sports? I'll tell you where to put your money down. Mybookie.ag. Why? Because you play, you win, you get motherfucking paid. Now, what they're doing is they're going to double your first deposit today. It's Tuesday. Get ready. Thursday night, the party starts. You got NBA Wednesday. Use promo code CHURCH. Get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. Where are you going to get that type of action on a Tuesday morning? Nowhere. So visit mybookie.ag today and use promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Kick this motherfucking Mule Lee. Oh shit. It's Tuesday morning. It's a beautiful day to be alive. Robert Isler, Uncle Joey, and the fucking Christ Killer. Ready to rock.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face. Stars to fill my dream. I'm a traveler upon time and space. To be where I have been.
What's the story, Robin?
What's going on, man? Thanks
How
for having
the
me.
Fuck are you? It's great to just see. Like I told you when you walked in, it's like watching somebody grow up in front of your eyes. And now you're this man. You know, when I booked the movie, I went back and revisited the series from the beginning. And last night we were talking on the phone, it was like I was watching you just being. I remember the episode when you locked the fucking window. And she couldn't get back in. That's like episode maybe 3 or something.
I don't even remember.
And Edie took out the machine gun and you locked the fucking laundry room so she couldn't back in.
That might be the pilot.
That could be the pilot.
That might be
you
the pilot.
You were just a little young kid.
I was 12 years old.
How long were you acting before that?
So I was 6 years old walking down the street with my dad. And some guy came up to my dad and said, hey, your son should do auditions or, you know, they didn't know I was going to be fucking short and look the way I do, but they were like, you should be a little model or, you know, do whatever. So my dad and my mom, my mom mainly started taking me on auditions for commercials and shit like that. And I booked like Pizza Hut, AT&T, like a whole IBM. Like I booked all these commercials and then my grandmother passed away. I broke my arm. All this weird stuff kind of happened in my life. And my mom, she decided, I guess, for me to stop for a few years. And my manager, who's still my manager today, which is almost 30 years later, this guy, Jeff Mitchell, he's fucking amazing. He would call every couple weeks, couple months or whatever and say, hey, you know, he should get back in. And, you know, we'd be like, no. And then finally, when we said yes, I went audition and got Sopranos.
When you got the call, it was like 5 out of 10 people who have, you know, become regulars and went on to go on the show. The first time you got the call, I was in New York, and I got a call one day, and they go, hey, you're dropping off tapes. I had this mediocre agent at the manager at the time. So he goes, you got to drop a tape off at Global Entertainment, somewhere else, and there's this show, The Fucking Sopranos. And I'm like, again, I'm not an opera singer.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
So guess what? I dropped two tapes off, and I didn't drop the Soprano tape off.
Really? Oh.
The pilot. I was in New York like in April or March, and they were looking. And I didn't drop it off. And when I see different characters in the show getting interviewed, especially that pilot, they were like, you know, Sopranos, we're not singers. I think Jamie had the same reaction.
Exactly, yeah.
A couple of people. Well, how was your, when you went in, did you even know what you were walking into?
No, well, I mean, nobody knew, you know, it wasn't a thing yet. It was just nobody. This, a show on HBO, which at the time was not a good thing. You know, you wanted to be fucking CBS or NBC or one of these things. And, but what's funny is everybody who's on the show thought it was a thing about singers and everything. And then when they told them, no, it's not singers, it's about Italian, like mafia shit, they were relieved. Or with me, I was like, oh, that's even worse. You know, I probably got a better chance of being a fucking singer because I'm a little Irish kid. I got freckles on my face. And, every kid in the audition was like, you know, slick back hair with the fucking leather jacket. And they were all trying to play up the Italian thing. And I remember my mom was even saying, like, why did you even send him on this? You know, he didn't look like everyone else at the fucking audition. And every time I cursed in the audition, David Chase laughed. Every time. In the auditions, then in the callbacks, then in the next one. And he just kept laughing. And I guess that's how I got the job. I got David to laugh over and over.
So you were 12, you said?
I was 12 years old.
When you're that old, like,
That young, exactly.
Like, is it like a dream, or are you just there? And is it fun? Like, what is it like? Because when you're an adult, you're like, oh, this is my dream. And you're right. 12 years old. You're in sixth grade or something.
It's you're just kind of doing it. You're just kind of like, I remember doing the pilot and being upset, and James coming over to me like, "What's your fucking? Why are you pouting?" And I was like, "Oh, all my friends are at camp. You know, like it was summer camp time. I was like, I want to be with my friends at camp and." Not here with a bunch of fucking 30-year-olds, you know, sitting around drinking cappuccino or, you know, whatever they're doing. Like, I had a great time, but in my head, I'm like, man, I want to be with other 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds, and I want to be, you know, getting my dick wet for the first time and seeing fucking what's going on instead of sitting around here. But it was, you know, thank God, obviously, you know, because it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
How many days were you on the pilot for?
I don't know. It probably, but I would, if I had to guess, I would say 3 weeks, it could be 2 weeks, could be a month. Honestly, I have no idea. I know towards the end, they started doing some episodes that would take like 6 weeks because it just got so, like, if we did an episode where the whole family was there and we're all sitting around the table and, like, you know, the cousin or the, it would take a full day for a minute and a half scene because there's eight people. You got the wide shots, you got the close ups, you got to match the food. No, you didn't eat with that hand, you ate with the other hand. You weren't eating pasta at that point, you were eating fucking salad. You were doing, and you got to match. And then when they finally get your take, they go, all right, everybody go away for 45 minutes, and we'd all go outside, you smoking cigarettes, bullshit and laughing, and they would be setting up the lights and the cameras and everything, getting ready for the next person's close-up. And then the next person, they had to go around and do eight of those, and they do a wide shot, then they do two shots, so two people in each thing. And there were times where we would have one dinner scene, and you'd show up at 6 in the morning, go till whatever time at night, and then you'd be showing up the next day again to eat the same fucking cold Chinese food for, you know, 12 hours and sit. But maybe twice for certain reasons did it ever feel like work to me.
Now, so you shoot the pilot, you go home, you go back to your life.
Yeah, totally.
You don't think about it, you're 12. Looking to get your little balls licked.
How long
do you get the call?
Well, what actually happened was, it didn't happen like that. What happened was, I got the pilot, and everybody in my family goes, he's going to be famous. You're going to be on a fucking TV show, and you're going to be famous. This is it. This is the beginning. And then we went to shoot the pilot, and people like Tony Sirico would be like, yeah, we fucking, you know, we do, you know, five of these every year. You know, we'll never see each other again. And then he just fucking shot all my dreams down. I went back fucking 12 years old, back to my family, who we were broke, like broke, and telling them, yeah, you know, what we thought this was, it's not. He's like, they do these all the time. It's a show for HBO. People were talking about, this is a fucking show for HBO. What do you think it's going to be, a fucking, you know, a big deal? So I remember going back and telling my family, breaking the news to them that, no, this isn't the big thing, you know? And then they called and said, we're going to do a season, and we did the season. And then I remember, it never really hit me, honestly, until I got a phone call and they said there's a billboard with you on it in Times Square. And we fucking, my family got in the car and we drove into fucking Times Square. We're driving through the traffic and we're looking around and we're looking around looking, and somebody's like, there it is. And you look up and my face was on the fucking billboard in Times Square. And I was like, oh shit.
I heard the premiere party was at a pizza place in the Village.
I think so. It might have been at John's. Right,
like a small, like HBO didn't even think.
Yeah.
It was really going to do anything, you know, like they had it in a pizza parlor or something.
Yeah. Which, but by the way, for then it was like, this is like, I was fucking broken. I thought it was the great, I'm like, free pizza. Everybody's fucking, I mean, it was amazing. You know, I thought it was incredible. But HBO, I think about the shit, you know, it's just crazy. Like, I think when I was 16, because you know, we were talking about where I grew up on 92nd Street and 2nd Avenue in New York. And I would be on a Thursday, I'd be in the park with my friends on a, you know, 16 years old, like drinking 40s, smoking blunts, getting into fucking trouble and shit. And then on Friday, I'd be flying first class on fucking HBO's dime to LA to stay in the nicest hotel in fucking LA on Saturday, Sunday, whatever. I'd be on the red carpet of the fucking awards. There'd be fucking, you know, Tom Hanks and this one and people talking to you. And by Monday, I'd be back in the fucking park. Drinking a 40, smoking a blunt, and it was. And the crazy thing is now I look at it and I go, this sounds insane. Where at the time I was like, yeah, no, I was in LA this weekend. Yeah, fucking, I met Tom Hanks, you know, fucking, I met all the cast of Friends. I met all the, yeah, we're all sitting together and having a drink, and yeah, they were great, you know, like a fucking, like, there used to be this homeless guy who we'd pay to buy us fucking alcohol. Like, we could get beer, but it was hard to get, like, hard alcohol. And I remember, like, I'd be fucking telling the homeless guy about how I was hanging out with like Ray Romano the night before, you know? And it's just fucking, it was, I think about it now and I go, that's the craziest shit ever. But at the time it was totally normal. You know, I'd send HBO back the fucking tuxedo that they rented from wherever for me. And then I'd leave my apartment and I'd go to the park and be drinking and smoking, you know, 3 hours later, just like with my buddies hanging out. It wasn't odd to me at all. Like, I just thought, yeah, this is life. You know, this is what's going on.
All right, so how many episodes before this fucking thing? Just because I had no idea. I'm a comic. I'm on the fucking road, and people are asking me, have you watched the show, The Sopranos? And I'm like, no. But fuck, I was supposed to read to that show.
Right, you didn't drop the tape.
So the first time I ever seen it was I was in Cleveland, and I went back to the room with like a gram of blow, and it was on the midnight showing, because they would always have like a 6 o'clock in California, 9 o'clock in New York, and you could watch it again that night.
Right,
and it was like maybe episode 5, and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" And I was coked up, so I really couldn't absorb, you know, my feet didn't. But I knew I got to watch this shit again.
Yeah.
And from there on, I started watching. And it was by like the 8th episode, right? Once that was it, you guys were off and fucking running. Your life changed.
Honestly, I don't remember it ever not being huge from the day I saw that billboard until, you know. Now if I go to a mall in Jersey, it's fucking, they go nuts, you know? It's still crazy. But when I'm living my normal life, it's not, I think there's something about when I do with my fucking facial hair or the way I shave or don't shave sometimes, or my hair, that there's some days where it's like I see people staring at me and pointing at me and coming up to me and asking me. And then there's some days where nobody fucking, you know, you go a full day and nobody even looks at you and nobody, it's great. But there was... Because you think about it, right? 8 episodes in would be 2 months. So to look back and try and remember like a 2 month period where it wasn't big. But from what I remember, as soon as the fucking pilot went, it was fireworks. It was crazy. Everybody loved it.
You know, and I was telling David, I don't know, you know, you got Bon Jovi, you got Bruce Springsteen, you know, you got Queen Latifah, you got fucking Naughty by Nature. I come out here in 1997. I signed with an agent, and she goes, I need a bio. And I wrote from New Jersey. And this is Bruce Springsteen, is already, right? 97.
Yeah.
We got Bruce Springsteen, we got Bon Jovi, we got all these fucking people in New Jersey. And I'll never forget her calling me and saying, listen, I'm changing that jersey to New York. didn't you say you went to grammar school in New York? And I go, yeah. She goes, I want you to change it to Hell's Kitchen or something. She goes, it's not cool to be from Jersey. She goes, wow. It's just not. It, people really don't. And I told David that. I go, once this show hit, everything changed. Now you could put that you were from Jersey.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, shit. Like, it was that much of an impact. Like, it was that much of an impact. And after that, it was off and fucking running.
Yeah.
Is it bigger in Jersey than it is in New York?
I mean, it's the fucking...
It represents
it's the Bible in New Jersey.
And really? They
yeah.
bought it hook, line, and sinker because that's your life in Jersey.
Wow. Okay.
Like, I can't go into a deli in Jersey and get back in the car without somebody knowing. Where, like, in New York, I could, you know, whatever. But... You know what's funny too is like a lot of people come up to me in New York and they're like, did we go to school together or did we? And I'm like, you're fucking 58. Like, what? Did we go to school together? You know what I mean? Like, people always say they don't know where they know. You know, people are like, did you, were you on the fucking softball team and this? And I'm like, no. And I don't tell them, you know, why they fucking know me, but I just, and they look and they go, oh man, my, you know, I got somebody on my team look just like you. You know, they can't recall where they know me from. But in Jersey, and they don't look at me like, where do I know you from in Jersey? You know, the second they see you, because I think that there's a lot of people in places where they go, oh, I did watch Sopranos 10 years ago, where anybody who likes Sopranos who lives in Jersey has not gone 10 years without watching Sopranos.
No.
They no. fucking, it's like it was, you know, it was, they're like, oh, it's fucking, you know, I rewatched the whole thing just 2 months ago, you know, and they fucking, it's great, man. They love it. It's great.
It's crazy to say that. My career started because of The Sopranos. Because before The Sopranos, I had booked a pilot for CBS as a Puerto Rican bartender in the Bronx. It was called Bronx County. And I booked basketball. I was a ref.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I was going out for big-time auditions, but I didn't have the chops. But then I went in for Mad TV for The Sopranos sketch.
Right.
The first time they did it. And that blew the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, Will Sasso was a great Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
We had a great time on it. And then we were going to do it again. And you know, The Sopranos kind of stopped us.
Really?
I guess Jamie Lynn was going to host.
Oh, wow.
And they were going to let Jamie do a sketch with us. But I guess The Sopranos was like, uh-uh, she could host. But she ain't doing no fucking sketch. So we canceled right. the sketch. But after the sketch, you have to remember that mob culture just blew up.
Yeah.
Commercials. You know, I shot maybe 4 commercials a year, and I would walk in and book the thing. I knew when I walked in, I was booking the thing because I looked just like Pussy.
Yeah.
You know, I looked just like him. Pennzoil, fucking Sears had a mafia garage commercial. I did a battery commercial for fucking somebody where we're digging the body up, and you left the lights on to dig at night. And
right.
We went to start the car, and the car didn't start. And they're like, if you were to use this battery, these mobs. I mean, I shot 20 nationals that we'd shoot, get paid for, and then they go, nah, the Italian-American Foundation
really?
Made them pull it. Bud Light, I did one with, what's his name? At the end, they ran over his head.
The guy Frank that, Vincent?
Frank Vincent.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
got taken off. I think his lasted the most out of everybody's. Like, 4 of us did different mafia commercials. It was amazing the amount of mob action that was in this town.
Yeah.
I did a movie, You Got Nothing. It was all mob stuff that was just short films that paid. They would pay me. Even though they had no budget, they would pay me because I looked like Vincent Pastore.
Yeah, of course.
It was fucking crazy. And then I went to New York. I was doing the New York Comedy Festival, and George Jan's assistant was in the audience, and she came up to me and she goes, are you busy tomorrow? You have to meet this lady. She's going to want to see you.
For sure.
And I went outside. I was supposed to go to Buffalo. She walked up to me, Georgine walked, and she goes, can you leave a business card upstairs? Because we're looking for guys like you. And I go, I'm here at 11 o'clock. And we started talking. I read for Gigi. I read for Sharippa's part. I read for the cop who's opening up a pizza place now, the federal cop that used to...
Oh.
Him, I just bumped into him. He's opening up a pizza place.
Out here?
In Brooklyn.
Oh, wow,
he's going back to Brooklyn. I read for that role, and David Chase's note was, keep sending me everything that you do. So then when Puss got killed off The Sopranos, he was going to do a show called The Mezzos about two gay mobsters.
Really?
ABC was developing it. ABC got cold feet and got rid of the project. They resold it to Fox. I did the short film, and then I sent that to Georgie, and then she called me in for Puss's brother, who was supposed to have four episodes.
Right.
But they sent the sides to the Comedy Store. I was doing Spider-Man 2. I was at Sony. So in those days, you had to be home to turn the fucking fax machine,
yeah.
So I went to the store, got the sides, and the girl spoke to Sharippa. And I think Sharippa, by mistake, said, my friends are auditioning for this thing, because Dom Herrera, and they called it lack of confidentiality agreement.
Really?
So we got fucking snapped.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
That, you know what's funny is, like, I hear, first of all, I think a reason why we, like, I don't have social media. I don't do any of the fucking
really
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I got nothing. And, like, I think about it now, and I think about how I think, you know, like, I see these shows like Stranger Things on Netflix or whatever show, and it's like, hey, we're here now. Look, we're eating the fucking, this is what we're eating. This is what we're doing. Here's where we're standing. Oh, look, here's the, and I think the reason, one of the many why Sopranos was so good is there was none of that.
None of that.
You never saw us sitting around fucking smoking cigarettes, laughing in our pajamas, because that's what we would do. You know, they would say, you got a fucking hour, or when we would do read-throughs, we would sit around there. There were no pictures of us anywhere. If you weren't watching me as fucking AJ and Jim as Tony and everybody, like, you know, she was Carmela. She wasn't putting up Instagram videos every 5 minutes going, oh, we're in the kitchen now, we're getting ready to shoot this scene. And I think that it just takes away from the intensity of, like, how, like, I think people watch this show, especially in New York, New Jersey, and they were like, no, that's Carmela, that's Tony, that's not, where now today, I think it's like people know so much more about the fucking celebrities, and then, oh, here's, I'm having lunch with fucking Jake, and, you know, and we're here, and then, and it just, I think there's, like, and I think that's why now everything is shifting to fucking podcasts and actually knowing who people are instead of these. I just think, like, the intensity of that. Like, I remember somebody coming up to me once and asking if Tony hit me. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, has he ever, like, given you a real beating? I go, you watch the show. He doesn't hit me when the cameras aren't on. Like, what are you talking about? And they just, like, they couldn't even understand what I was trying to say. Like, they were just so fucking caught up in, like, they saw me in the street. And they wanted to know if Tony, like, beat me. And I was like, it's whatever you see. Like, I don't even know how to answer this guy asking me this question. You know what I mean? Where now it's like they would see us fucking on Instagram every day, you know, hugging each other and laughing and this. And they would never ask that question because they would know, you know, they would be like, oh, yeah, I saw you and Tony went to go get fucking, you know, chicken fingers the other day. And they would never ask something like that.
No. Were you going to school when you shot the pilot? I mean, you were going to grammar school, obviously.
Yeah, so I went to school up until about maybe one or two seasons in, and then I was working so much that I would show up to school and I wouldn't know what the fuck they were talking about. So then I just kind of stopped going, and I leaned more towards the fucking kids who were in the park drinking and smoking and that kind of thing. And then I ended up stopped going to school, and HBO got me a homeschool tutor for me to finish out and get a high school diploma. So I was just every day, I would go to school. What I started doing was let's say I'd work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you have off. I would sleep until 11, and I'd go to school. Lunch would be at like 11:30. I'd go wait outside of my school for everybody to come out for lunch. And then I would try and convince people to stay out and not go back in and hang with me and go to the park and fucking drink a 40 or smoke or do whatever. And then, Sometimes I would end up like having a few beers at lunch and be like, hey, I'll fucking go back. I'll go back in. Yeah, let's go say hi to Mr. fucking whatever. And it was just, you know, a lot of the times I shouldn't have, I probably should have been walking back in there. But yeah, that was probably, I probably gave up on school around like 14, I would say. Yeah. And then no high school would really accept me because my days absent was so high. You know, I had like a my days absent was higher than my average in school. So my average was like a 56 and my days absent was like 58 or some shit like that. I forget the numbers, but so all these schools would just see that and be like, no, no. And then I remember some amazing fucking school called me. I forget if it was like Baruch or like one of these schools. And they go, listen, it was the head of the school. The woman calls my cell phone. And she goes, or she called my home phone, I guess, because I was young. So she calls my home phone and she goes, I want to ask you, I'll accept you into this school if you promise me when you're not working, you'll give it your all and you'll be the best student you could be in this school. And so you don't have to go to fucking MLK or whatever school in New York that you're going to have to go to. I'll let you in this school, but you have to promise me. I go, I can't do that. Because I was like, I'll be lying. If I tell you that that's what I'm going to do, I go, I know where I'm at right now. I'm not going to all of a sudden fucking flip a switch and be. And she was like, well, thank you for being honest with me. And then I went to like a pretty shitty school and you know, that was probably ninth grade. And I just never really showed up. You know, I showed up every now and then to. I don't even know why, honestly, you know, there were just some days where I'd probably wake up and be like, I feel like going to see everybody and fucking hanging out there. But I never even like. I don't even remember getting fucking grades or them to like, it was like, I wasn't there, you know? And it was like, there were a few people in the school who were cool and kind of understood like you're, you know, cause Sopranos was fucking huge at that time, you know? So they kind of understood. And I just, after I would say like, I never stepped foot back in school after probably the age of 15.
That's like season 3. Yeah.
Yeah. Ish. Like after around there. And then they got me a tutor. But then what happened was somewhere around like 16, 17, I really started going out and partying. And then the school just fucking, it kept slipping. So like I would show up to see her at my, even like my, it would be a struggle for me to get to my kitchen table because I'd be fucking hungover. I'd be feeling like shit. And by like the second hour and she's asking me these questions and this and my head hurts. And I'm just thinking about, you know, the fucking girl from last night. And then I'm just like, I don't, you know.
I mean, you were living the life, man.
It was
you
crazy.
Were on the best show on television. You know, you were shooting fucking crazy hours. How many months would you shoot? Would it take to shoot a season?
Six? Sometimes it was six, but towards the end it was more. It was like nine, I think. It started,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it started becoming more and more. Maybe like eight. But then we did, I think, I have such a bad memory, but if for this, I think we started doing like less episodes as the show went on, but they just became... I remember it taking so long at the end. It was so, and I remember like sometimes they would come to us and say, hey, listen, you know, you're not in the next episode. You know, you got fucking 2 weeks off. And I remember people like Edie, if she had very little work or wasn't in an episode, would be upset. Like they would tell me I had 2 weeks off. I would be trying to hold in from fucking, you know, fist pumping and fucking, you know, being all excited. Cause I was like, oh shit, I can go party. I could just go fucking hang out with my friends for 2 weeks. And I know I got this fucking, the greatest show in the fucking, I have the greatest show to come back to. And then I'd be like, all right, you know, I'll see you guys on, call me when you need me. And then I would just go and fucking hang out with my friends. And I'd get the call like, all right, that's, you know, the script for episode 4 is out. You're in it. And I would just fucking go. And but like, it never felt like work. Working with James and Edie and Jamie and that they were so fucking good. And every like, you sit and you watch Edie Falco do a scene. And then you're like, I'm getting paid to be here. Like, it's the craziest. And the way that I grew up, like, I grew up really poor. And basically, I kind of had the thing where it was like, if you do everything right, you'll get your grandfather's job. If you do everything right, if you don't fuck up, if you do good in school, you could take his job, which he was like the super of a building. And go you, and then you'll fucking, you know, in our neighborhood, he had it. He had the fucking great job. He had it easy, you know. He would fucking go into work at like 6 a.m. or whatever, fix shit in the building. And then at noon, he would go to the bar to have like a sandwich and a beer. And then he just wouldn't go back to work. He would just end up, you know, drink it. Whatever. Hey, if you need me, you know, I'll be down at the bar. He'd be a block away. But things were fucking cooler back then. You know, this is like the late 80s, early 90s, where shit was just, you know, people weren't watching every movie you made because you didn't have a cell phone. They couldn't get to you. So they'd be like, oh, where's Bobby? And they'd be like, oh, he's, you know, yeah, we don't know. We'll tell him tomorrow. And then he would fuck, but he showed up every day, 6 a.m., fix it because he only worked a block away, you know? And then he was the super of our building too. So we got to live in our building rent free. So there was, there were a bunch of us living in a one bedroom, and there was no door on the bedroom. So it was just like a bedroom with the door open, the kitchen and the living room. And we were just all fucking in there. So it's like to then jump to, like you said, now this, you're on the fucking best show ever. Like this show could have stopped at season 3 and I would have been the fucking success story of, you know, like it still would have been like, oh my God, he did the greatest thing. And the fact that it went on 7 seasons and people argue it's the best show ever and all this shit, it's crazy to think of how it all turned out.
When you were shooting this, while you were shooting these, what did you think of David?
I love David. I always love David because, I mean, I looked at him as, he's the reason I'm here. You know what I mean? Like, he's the guy who gave me this fucking, this thing. You know, I was fat and yet I could still get girls because it was like, oh shit, he's on a fucking TV. You know, like, I loved David. I loved the way he was. I always thought he was a fucking, you know, 13-year-old me, what do I know? But I always thought he was just some fucking genius and he was the best. He was funny. He was always super nice to me. I remember one time where, like, I was 18 years old and we were shooting a scene and it was me, James, Edie, and probably Jamie. I don't remember if Jamie was there, but we were in the kitchen doing whatever. And I just remember, like, turning my head and seeing David walk onto set and he went to go watch, like, on the monitor or whatever. And I remember, like, feeling nervous. And that was the first time I was like, oh, shit, yeah, that's the boss, you know? Like, that, because I never, when we went to go do the pilot, there was no giant celebrity. There was nobody who was saying, oh my God, can you believe blah, blah, blah's here? Can we get pictures with it? We were all sitting in the same fucking, we'd all sit outside laughing, bullshitting. There was nobody was from California. So nobody was, you know, you would hear things about people being like, I want the biggest trailer. There was none of that. We wouldn't even, sometimes we've had trailers on set and we wouldn't even go over there. We'd be sitting in the basement of the house that we were shooting and just fucking laughing, making fun of each other, making fun of people, doing whatever. You know, it was always just us sitting around having the best time.
When did you stop going off the reservation? Like, you booked it when you were 12.
Booked it when I was 12.
And when you were like, when did you start partying? Like, when did you get the green light?
So when I was like 11 or 12, I think I was 12, I first smoked weed. And
welcome to New York City.
Yeah, I know.
Welcome to New York fucking city.
You know what I talk about all the time, which what makes kids from New York City different than anywhere else? It's like, let's say fucking Tom lives upstate and he tells his parents, I'm going to Ricky's house. When he goes to Ricky's house, you know who he's going to see. He's going to see Ricky. He's going to see Ricky's mom, Ricky's dad. And that's it. He's going to see 3 people. When I used to tell my mom, hey, I'm going to Rex's house, I could see 400 people on my way from here to just going a few blocks to my friend's place. You know, so you have to learn. You have to be always looking at, like, what the fuck is this person up to? What are they there? We're like, I remember when I was like 16-ish, I was doing stupid shit and got in a little trouble and got moved into my dad's out of the city for a little bit. And I remember talking to 16-year-olds upstate and being like, what? Where are you? What do you mean your mom's going to drive us to the mall? Like, that sounds like fucking, I'd rather sit downstairs and fucking stare at the wall than sit in the car with your mom while she drives us to the fucking mall, you know? Because it was like, by the time I was 12, it was like we'd be hanging out in fucking staircases and smoking weed and drinking and then. So it was around 12, 13, 14, I was drinking, smoking weed and that kind of stuff, but it was still just fun, you know? It was like, hey, let's go meet over here and this. And then probably like 15, 16 became like, oh, you know, somebody would, because we didn't have money to do other shit, you know? And then around 15, 16, it would be like, oh, somebody said they could get us fucking ecstasy, you know? So we would save up and try and get it. But then I was probably able to, I just had a little more money and everything. But around 17, end of 16, 17, I started going out to clubs in New York and really partying and just getting whatever the fuck I wanted for free. Like, people would just come up to me with a fucking handshake or, but it's also around the time where I got arrested and I was in the paper for fucking weed and this. So people knew, you know, so people would come up to me and just handshake with a fucking bag of weed. And then around 17, it became blow and I started doing blow. And then from 18 to 22, I was doing blow every fucking time I drank, every time. And then I would, so I would binge drink. I would drink for 3 days, just doing blow, staying up, fucking partying, everything. And then I would chill for 3 or 4 days, just smoke weed, take fucking painkillers, just kind of like stay in. And then at 22 or 20, no, maybe 23, I stopped drinking for a year to stop doing coke. Because like I couldn't stop without, I'd be like, okay, I'm not doing fucking coke anymore. And then it would be 3 days later, we'd be somewhere with the fucking windows painted black and we would just be going for fucking 3 days, party and everything. And like, I think that the difference with me was like, I didn't have a job. I didn't have responsibilities. So it was never like, you do those impressions of those people all the time. And it's like that, like I would meet people and they'd be like, I had the craziest night with you. We were out till 7 a.m. I'd be like, what are you like? I don't even like, you know, people think a crazy night is them staying out till 7 a.m. because they have responsibilities. They got a fucking job. They got this. I was 18. I had my own apartment. I would get 9 months off from Sopranos at a time. And I would just go, all right, I'm going to go out and I'm going to drink. And one fucking night led into 9 months. And all of a sudden I'd be getting that call like, all right, we're starting up again. And I'd be like, oh, shit, all I did was fucking do coke and drink and go party for
9 months.
Yeah, for the entire time. And then something in me, I don't know what it was. Let's say I had to work on Wednesday. I wouldn't even drink that Friday before. Just in case, if I drank that Friday, started fucking doing blow, it turned into Saturday, Sunday, Monday, then I wanted to sleep for fucking 24 hours and I woke up and I didn't know my lines or I didn't, so like, whenever I would have to work, I would stop partying or drinking or anything for a long time before, you know, and then as soon as we would fucking, all right, you got 2 weeks off or wrap a season, that was it. And it was just, like you were saying, we never know what's bad, you know, we never know we have a problem. So it's like, I went from taking 3 Percocets a day to all of a sudden taking 15. And it's like, you don't go, oh shit, on Tuesday I took 4 and now I'm taking 5. And then it became to the point where I would have a fucking Percocet on my nightstand because I would wake up and I would just fucking feel like shit and I would take the Percocet and I didn't even drink water with them. I would just put them in the back of my teeth and chew them and then I would just fucking lay there. And then 15 minutes later, I'd be like, all right, you know, I could fucking get out of bed now and function. And then I would stay home for 3 or 4 days smoking weed, taking Percocets, taking Xanax, watching TV, playing online poker, doing whatever. And then I would get the call like, hey, we're going out tonight. You know, it's blah, blah, blah's birthday. And that would be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just drinking, partying. But like, I'm so grateful. I look back now that it all happened because it's the reason why if I meet some chick today and I get married and everything, I could tell her like, listen, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to be one of these assholes who all of a sudden took a fucking business trip to Vegas with his friends and now he discovered fucking blow and hookers and it like, I went through it. Yeah, I know what I want. You know, I know what I want in life. It's not that because even though I stopped doing blow, so I stopped doing blow when I was about 23 or 22, whatever. So I stopped drinking for a year. So I go back to drinking. I go, if I ever do blow again, that's it. I'm never drinking again. And about 6 months into that, I found Molly. And I was like, all right, well, it's not blow. And then I would just fucking stay up for days. I just replaced Molly with blow. And I would just stay up for fucking 3 days doing Molly nonstop. And you just, you know, you just start to be around a lot of people that you shouldn't be around, you know, and a lot. And especially
with... It goes by quick.
It goes by... You don't even...
1 minute, you don't even know. Lee, and the next minute, it's Maximus.
You don't even know what the fuck happens.
With fucking pills and...
Yep.
And you're in. And yeah, that's what people don't understand. You're in. How was it once the show ended?
I wasn't sad about it at all. I wasn't sad.
Were you ready to move on?
I don't even think for me there was any sort of like transition. Like it was like on Monday we're doing the show. David said, hey, we're not doing it anymore. Okay. Because it was like on one hand, I guess I just thought in my head like, well, I don't have to work. I don't have to take those times off from partying anymore. You know, I don't have to fucking clear my head for a fucking 3 days before I go to work. I don't have to. Now it's just hang out with my friends. So my manager, when I was like 22, 23, was like, you got to keep working now. Sopranos ending. And I was like, give me 6 months or however long I said, you know, give me a year. I just want to hang out with my friends and I want to fucking party. And I want to do nothing. And then that turned into 6-7 years of just fucking nonstop partying and like people would always just talk about like how do you fucking drink so much and party so much. It's like because then I could go sleep for 20 hours if I want, you know, like I don't have fucking kids with toys banging them in my head waking me up in the morning. I don't have a wife. I don't have any fucking responsibilities. If I don't feel good, I want to sleep for 20 hours and then take Percocets for 3 days. And I just had no, and when I went to seek help, what he told me was the reason why I was having that anxiety, he thinks, is because I was just like, when you see a fucking piece of like lint floating in the air, He's like, that's how you were. You didn't know what was going. You were just, and even though you enjoyed that, your body couldn't fucking handle it. Your brain couldn't handle it. You couldn't. You needed some kind of anchor. You needed that thing that was going to stop you and make you clear your head for 3 days and go to work. And that you couldn't just be that piece of whatever floating around.
When did you get sober?
So when I was 28, my 28th birthday, I went out and I took like 35 mollies. And I was fucking out of my mind. Like I was just, I went to go see a concert and I was in fucking Madison Square Garden. So I show up to my friend's place and I go, I'm going to take 5 mollies and we're going to go to this fucking concert and we're going to have a good time. So let's say the concert's at 10. I'm making up times. I don't remember the times. Let's say the concert's at 10. At 7 o'clock, I take 5 mollies and I'm fucking drinking tequila and hanging out. So now all of a sudden it's 9:30 and I'm like, you know what? It's my birthday. And I kind of had in my head like, I'm going to chill out after this. I'm going to, but I always did. You know, I always had that thing of like with Percocets. I'd be fucking taking Percocets every day for a year. And every night I would get in bed and be like, all right, tomorrow we're not going to take the fucking Percocets. We're going to start, you know, or we're going to take 3 instead of taking fucking 12. And then the next day I would just, you just fall back into that routine. You forget, you know, you wake up, you fucking chew one. Then all of a sudden an hour later you take another one. Then you're fucking popping Xanax and this. So, we're about to leave for the concert and I go, you know what? I'm going to take 5 more fucking mollies and just be off my fucking ass at this concert. And I go, there's nobody going to be looking at me. It's going to be fucking dark. I had like sunglasses on and a fucking, you know, a scarf and I'm all fucking, you know, I'm like, we're going to have a fucking ball. And it was like a DJ. So I was like, everybody's going to be off their fucking ass. Then we'll go out and party after. So I take 5 mollies and then I took like a bottle like this and it was ginger ale. And I put tequila in it and I cracked 5 mollies in there. And I was like, in case I'm in the concert and I feel like it's going down. Because at the time, I wasn't some guy who 10 mollies fucking, you know, ended my life like some dad from fucking, you know, the suburbs. I was already taking numbers like that, you know, if not a little less, but it was my birthday. I was like, I'm going to take a little more. So I got this ginger ale full of tequila and the molly, and I'm walking into the concert and I'm fucking like my teeth are fucking chattering. I'm fucking, I'm feeling good, but I'm loving it. I'm with fucking 2 of my best friends. I'm on top of the world. Everything's great. But it's now when I think about it, I'm like, I was fucking rocked. And I get to the front of the line and some guy who looked like a cop, but he's probably just a security guard. He's like, hey, and he sees me. And in your head for that 1 second, you just go, oh, it's all over. You know, you don't know why. You just go, oh shit, he knows or something. They're not. And he goes, you can't bring that in. And I had the fucking ginger ale in my hand with the tequila. And I was so relieved that he just said, you can't bring that in and not you're fucking coming with me or you're under or whatever. I unscrewed the fucking tequila with the 5 mollies, drank that, and walked into Madison Square Garden. And I was, so I'm on 15 mollies in maybe 4 hours, something like that. And I'm in there and I'm just fucking rocked. Like, I remember walking through the fucking hallways and people have on the fucking glowing fucking lights thing. And I remember like getting to our seats and people were also fucked up at our seats. So they're like high-fiving this. And I'm saying, it's my birthday. So I'm saying to these people, thank you for coming. And they're looking at me like, thank you for coming. Like, thank you for coming to my birthday. Like, I think somewhere in my head, I thought it was my fucking birthday party, the Madison Square Garden with fucking 40,000 people, however. And I had a great night that night. We fucking party, we stay at the concert, everything's amazing. And so that's a Friday. Like Saturday, Sunday, I'm still up. I'm taking Molly every like hour, you know, taking a little. I go to bed, I wake up, and I remember like it was probably 4 days after that I was supposed to go to a birthday dinner, and I remember being like, I can't get out of bed. Like, I remember being like just feeling cold and feeling like shit and awful. And I was like, I think I might have done it this time. Like, there might be no coming back from where I am. Like, I would fucking hear something in my hallway and get sketched out. Like, I was just super, I was fucked up. And I remember saying, I got to go to the doctor because I couldn't eat anything. I would eat, I would throw up. It was just over and over. So I go to the doctor and he's like, when's the last time you ate a fucking vegetable? And I'm like, I don't know, you got chicken fried rice. They got peas in the fucking chicken fried rice. I eat. He goes, you got to stop what you're doing right now. He goes, you got to stop drinking for a while. He goes, you got to eat some fucking vegetables. You got to try doing some fucking kind of exercise. I hadn't done exercise in, I don't know, 6-7 years, like any sort of, any, like even like a walking on a tread, you know, like I actually had a treadmill in my living room because sometimes I would get fat, like I would gain fucking 20 pounds and I'd get on the treadmill on incline and watch a fucking TV show or whatever. But like besides walking, I had done nothing for so long. And he's like, you got to do this, you got to do that. So that week, I remember I left his office and I went to a place that made fucking vegetable juices. And he goes, go get a, just an all vegetable juice. So I go, all right. I go, I drank that and I felt high. Like I felt, but because my body had no fucking nutrients for 7 days, but also like, I felt good. Like I was like, holy shit. Like I could keep this down. My body, I haven't had vegetables in who knows how long. I feel real good. I went to like the park the next day. I meet up with my friend and he's like, yeah, we're going to start fucking doing yoga. You should start. So I start doing the fucking yoga and that, and I'm still taking the Percocets and the Xanax and everything. But I was like, I made the decision then that I was going to stop doing Molly and stop drinking. And that was 7 years ago. I haven't been drunk since then, but I was at a dinner like 4 years ago and somebody gave me a vodka soda by mistake. And I thought it was a soda. I just said club soda and the guy thought it was vodka club soda because everybody I was with is partying. And when I took a sip of it, I realized there was vodka in it. And I remember people like freaking out and it was this whole big thing. And I became obsessed with like not liking the fact that I was that guy. Like I like, oh no, we don't know what could happen. He has no control over the, he's who knows what would happen if he drank that this. So I called up my best friend. So I'm 34 now. I met him in preschool, like 30 years. His name is Rex. He's the fucking greatest guy. And I go, I need you to come with me to dinner and we're going to open a bottle of wine and I'm going to have 4 or 5 sips of a glass of wine. I just need to know what's going to happen. If I have to live my life differently. If for so, I just felt this way. Like if I drink these 5 sips of wine and it leads to a fucking crazy night of partying and this, then I know I'm never going to drink again, whatever. But I need for myself to know, because I was laying in bed at night like, what if that sip that I took was too big? What if there was more alcohol? What if there was more vodka in that fucking glass than there was? What if that was straight vodka and I took a sip? Would I have fucking fallen off? So I wanted to know for me. And I went to meet my boy and we had a fucking couple sips of wine and that was it. It was over. I was like, okay, now I know. I'm not so weak. Or, you know, and I'm not trying to say that anybody who can't, if somebody can't do that, that they're weak. I just wanted to know, am I this weak for around alcohol? If I have 4 sips, is it going to take over my fucking mind and make me do things, you know, just make me fall back into that same person I was? I couldn't shake that not knowing thing. And, so it's been 7 years and there probably have been 3 instances where at dinner I took a couple sips of wine. Otherwise, I haven't had a single drink. I haven't been drunk. I haven't touched Molly or Coke has been around the same. Like Coke was like 23 and I'm 34, so 11, 12 years, something like that. And then Percocets is less. Percocets is like 4 or 5 years, maybe 5 years. Xanax took me a long time to get off. Xanax is a fucking bitch. For me, everything was easy compared to Xanax. Like, people talk about opiates, and I guess obviously the withdrawal from, you know, something like heroin is a lot rougher than Percocets. But what I had to deal with the benzos is like a fucking, it's just the worst nightmare. Because
how long was the process?
Years, you know, it was a really long time because I was taking something like roughly 3 milli. I would take like a bar and a half every day, maybe like a little bit more. And but it just became, which is not that, in my head, I don't think anything is a lot, you know, but I feel like that's not a lot. But it became 6 years of doing that every day or 7 years or something. And so I had to go see a specialist because I couldn't shake it. I'm like, the Percocets I figured out on my own. The drinking, I was like, I'm just, you know, done everything. When with the benzos, I couldn't figure out how to even lessen my dose. And I'm going to tell you what the guy told me. Obviously, anybody out there, don't take my fucking advice. I'm no doctor. I'm just telling you what he told me, which was the first thing you have to do is get yourself on a schedule, because your brain, when you're not on Xanax, it's up here. Then you take your Xanax and it's here. And sometimes you don't take it for 3 hours. So it gets back. He's like, you have to get on a regular thing. So if you say 2 hours after I wake up, I take my first Xanax. Then I take one every 3 hours and I take the exact same amount. So I was like, oh, so that was my first step. That was my first meeting. He goes, just start doing that. I go, okay, no problem. Next time I came to see him, he's like, all right, once you get comfortable with that, he's like, you're going to go less and less, super slow, over and over. So you're going to go from taking 0.5 six times a day to taking, you know, half of 0.2 or you, however you want to do it. So he gave me, for the first time in my life, I had a prescription for fucking Xanax, which is crazy. Like, it took me quitting to get finally get a prescription. I was just getting them on the street, you know? And so he goes, because I'm taking the bars. He goes, well, I'll give you milligrams so that it's easier for you to quit. Because if you have a bar, it's hard to make 0.25 out of a bar or 0.37, whatever you want to do. So he gives me these 0.25s. So I start taking like 1.5 0.25s every 3 hours or whatever it is. And then going to, and then once I got really low on the milligrams, he goes, all right, now start spacing it into every 4 hours instead of every 3 hours you're taking it. And then you're going to only do it three times a day. So I mean, this was years of a process.
How did it affect your sleep?
It wasn't too bad because I always kept that one at night, like right before bed. The problem became, what really took me a long time too, was the idea of having none. Right, like the idea of lessening it was something I really wanted to do, so it was kind of, it wasn't too hard. It was like, okay, trying to quit on my own was fucking insane. Like I said it to you earlier, the feeling, the only way I can describe it is like, if you're trying to quit Xanax, for me it's like if your biggest fear is heights and somebody takes you skydiving and right when they open the fucking door to that plane and they turn to you and go, are you ready? And the way that you feel right there looking out however many thousands of feet up, that's how I felt sitting on my couch watching TV. Like, it was just all day that fucking rattling fear of, it was a fucking bitch to open my front door. It was a bitch to get into the fucking elevator. Like, everything was just, it was fucking, it was torture trying to quit on my own. Well, what he told me to do made it a lot easier. And then my sleep didn't really get affected until it was time for to not do any at all. So what happened was, this guy told me, you're gonna have to eventually not do any. And I couldn't do it. Like, I was like, I can't not take that one in the middle of the day and that one at night. Like, I feel like I'm holding on too tight to it. I don't know what to do. So he's like, all right, when you're ready, you know, the same way you did this, when you're ready, when you're ready. So I had to come out to LA for a little bit. This guy was a specialist, and he charged $300 to go see him. And after I saw him a bunch, I was like, listen, I can't afford to come see you anymore. So he's like, well, what I'll do is I'll charge you $150 to come see me. So I'm like, okay. So I'm paying the $150 to see him. But I'm also getting the Xanax from him. So in my head, I'm like, well, I'm saving this amount of money by not buying the fucking Xanax, right? So he tells me, I'm going to LA for a while. So I come back from LA, however long I was gone, and we have our first meeting, and my bill shows up, and it's $300. And I was like, oh, this guy forgot that we're on a fucking $150 schedule. So I hit him up. I go, hey, remember, it's $150, not $300. And he was like, oh, no, well, you didn't see me for a while. You were in L.A. Now that you're back, it's $300. And I was like, what do you mean? We agreed on $150. When were you going to tell me those three? And I don't know if it's the fucking Irish in me, if it's the addict in me, what the fuck it is. But I was like, fuck this. I was like, I'm not taking that Xanax tonight. I don't care if I fucking feel like I'm falling out of a plane. I don't care if I feel like I can't sleep for fucking 3 days. I don't give a fuck. I'm never seeing this dude again. And I'm not restarting this shit with somebody else. And I remember 3 days later, I'd never touched a Xanax ever again.
So you've been sober for how long now?
So like I said to you, there's times where like I hurt myself in the gym and I'm like, I'll smoke a joint at night or take a fucking hit off a bowl.
Listen, reefer don't fucking count.
Oh yeah, that's how I feel. But I also, I don't like to say I'm sober and then somebody sees me fucking buying weed at the store and yeah.
My thing was the alcohol too.
Yeah.
I could do one drink, two drinks. When I was 20, once I did 3 Southern Comfort and alcohol and orange juice, you could rape me.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah.
When I was 20, the first one I could control. The second one I can control. But the third one, we're going to Washington Square Park. We're copping 8 Valiums for $10.
Yep.
Then we're going to 135, pick up an 8 ball. And then we're going to stop at 181 and pick up some fucking F-66 Express. And we're shooting over the George Washington Bridge. So for me today, reefer is my teddy bear.
Yeah.
That is my teddy bear.
Right.
I could look you both in the eye right now and Lee will tell you, I don't even think I get that high anymore.
Right.
I get up in the morning and I do, you know, 8 bongs at fucking 7.
Well, yeah, I've seen the fucking video. I know what you're up to.
Yeah, and I do it to get an appetite.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
If I don't smoke in the morning, I won't be fucking hungry.
Yep.
It's a drag to eat. So if I smoke, I'll do a protein shake, something. Yep. Something. Just so I don't go out and then get sick while I'm driving.
Right.
Because if I don't eat, I'll get sick while I'm driving.
Right.
I don't consider weed at all.
Yeah. But by the way, there's some people who do and they can't smoke it because they feel like that's a fucking domino.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a trigger. Absolutely. And I get that. For me, I need it to keep me off. Look, they do Sober October.
Yeah, yeah.
And I spoke to Joe about it. I go, I'm going to be strictly honest with you. Do you know when I went off the most in my life when I was told? See, I'm Cuban. And being Cuban is almost as bad as being fucking Irish. Okay? Almost as stubborn as being fucking Irish. We're even more stubborn than you guys. If you said to me, Joey, I don't... Like when you went to see the doctor, he goes, I think you should quit with everything.
Yeah.
That's one thing. When you went on probation and they told you you couldn't smoke, that's what eats my craw.
Yeah.
The rule is the one I'll break. So if you come to me tomorrow and go, look, I'm going to start testing you once a month. You know, we're going to test you for whatever. I'm going to smoke. It's when you say to me, like yesterday, I got up. I didn't smoke till last night.
Yeah.
I got up yesterday morning in whatever, fucking Omaha. And I didn't have papers. I had the weed, but I didn't smoke. And I got home, and I got busy. And like last night at 9 o'clock, I smoked.
Yeah.
And I was happy. I got a little hungry, whatever, you know. But that's my teddy bear.
Yeah.
Alcohol, let me tell you something. I never liked it. I'll drink it to be social. I'll drink it to, Jesus Christ, there's nothing worse in the world than standing there with a Coke with a lime and faking that you're drinking a fucking Cuba Libre like I have a fag. Okay? Nothing bothers me more than that. To have a fucking... Either you're drinking or you're fucking not.
Yeah.
If you're not drinking, go to home because you're making me fucking depressed.
Yeah.
It's like when Christopher didn't toast Paulie. He toasted him with water. He goes, what are you trying to jinx me? You know, if you're not going to drink, go home. Do me a favor. You know those people that go to the bar? I'm here to drink a club soda. Just go home. You're making everybody get depressed. I grew up in the 70s, Robert, where every TV show, if you watch any TV show from the 70s, when you walked in a person's house, they had a cart. A liquor cart with two bottles, no label. You didn't know what you were drinking. It's not like, all right, let me get a scotch. No. They poured and gave it to you.
It was brown, that's it.
It was brown.
Yeah.
Rye, it could be whatever, and you drank it.
Right.
Now we got pussies. Now people are like, well, it's got 8 calories.
Right.
You know, in the 70s, boom, bombs ahoy. I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
I wish.
Me too.
I could go to 3 places every day. And just have a drink. Lee, get a drink. Get a tequila. Boom. And then not again. Like maybe like at 6, have another one. Right. And maybe go to the Comedy Store and have another one. You know how many times I go to the Comedy Store and I'm like, tonight I'm drinking.
Right.
Get a fucking margarita.
How long has it been since you've tasted alcohol?
Saturday night.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I had 2 shots of Jägermeister on stage.
Yeah. Right.
Friday night. But again, doesn't do nothing to me.
Yeah.
I had 2 doubles of Jaeger, and it's just, for me, it's like I just went over my Weight Watcher points with sugar. Right. That's what I think.
So it was the blow. It was all the blow.
That was my world. I love the blow, the pill, and the alcohol combination.
The pill, like downers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like no...
No way.
No speed, no... What's that shit? Adderall?
Yeah, I took that once, and I remember I was like, I just feel like I can't sleep. That was it. I didn't, like... For me, Percocet, like I said earlier, I loved fucking Percocet. I loved drinking. I loved doing that shit. But probably, I mean, there's a chance that Coke is like the thing I did the most of. And like, I never even liked it. You know what I mean? Like, I remember there were times where I'd wake up next to a girl and see her doing fucking wake up doing Coke. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what the fuck is. But then, you know, I would think that was disgusting and not want to be around her. And then 10 hours later, I'd be like, where's that fucking girl's number? You know, like I'd be looking to fucking get, because I would be fucking 6 drinks in. And like, I got to a point where I would drink a bottle of tequila before I'd go out, before I would leave my apartment. So I had like those red fucking plastic cups in my apartment, and I'd fill it with, like, I would be sitting on my couch feeling like shit. And I'd be like, all right, I'm going to fill a fucking cup up with tequila, drink it, and then by somewhere around the second one, when I'm fucking smoking that cigarette and I put a fucking song on and I start fucking feeling good, and then I had a place in the shower for my fucking cup of tequila, and I'd be in the fucking shower and then by somewhere around the fucking fourth one, maybe I'd start hitting people up. All right, where are we going? What time are you coming to fucking pick me up? Am I meeting you there? And then And by the time that there was a little bit left in that bottle, I was ready to fucking go out to. I'd put it in a ginger ale bottle or a water bottle, whatever. I would drink it in the cab or in my friend's car. But so, like, I have friends who I've been friends with for 10 years who think I'm the most social, like, only love to, I could talk to the fucking wall and this, where, because they only saw me outside of my apartment after drinking a fucking bottle of tequila, you know, where other, like, then I have other friends who, like, lived in my neighborhood who have known me since I was fucking 6 years old, who are like, oh, Rob will sit in his fucking crib for, you know, 6-7 days, 2 weeks, like, there's times where he just doesn't come out. Where I have friends that I knew from going out and from clubs would, if you told them that I'm that way, they would be like, you don't know Rob, he's nothing like that. Because I wasn't, because as soon as you start drinking, I'd want to, I think a lot of my problem was like being around people, you know? And as soon, I would be, if I was sober, like if you put me right now sober, standing in a fucking nightclub, I want to blow my brains out. So that's why I would have a fucking bottle of tequila and there's nowhere I want it to be more than the club, because nobody's fucking talking to you. You're just dancing. Everybody, I know that guy's got Molly, that guy's got fucking blow, that, and nobody, like, when it came to Percocets and weed and shit like that, I always had to put money up to get them. Where when it came to fucking Coke and Molly, the amount of money, if you put the amount that I did compared to the amount of money that I spent on it, it would be, nobody would believe how that's possible, because you just go out to clubs in New York and everyone's got
Everybody's
it.
Got it.
Everybody's giving it to you. Oh, hey, you want some fucking Molly? Here's this. That. And then all of a sudden you're in somebody's apartment for fucking 3 days and there's a fucking plate of just a mound of fucking, that one's Coke, that one's ketamine, that one's fucking Molly. And you're just fucking hanging. Girls are coming through. You're laughing. You're fucking partying. Music's on. The neighbors are fucking complaining, banging on the walls. And you're having the time. You've smoked 140 cigarettes. You're fucking in the, oh, I love, what is this chair made out of? You know, you're just fucking, everything's, it's amazing. And then 3 days later, I'd be the guy who's not leaving his couch for 10 days. That if you told those people that that's how I was, they'd be like, nah, that's not Rob. He always wants to fucking, you know, he would be the fucking head of the Thanksgiving Day parade, throwing a fucking baton in the air, because that's how I was when I was drinking. I always wanted to fucking party more and more. No, let's not go to bed. Let's this. Where like when I would be on fucking pills in my apartment, I didn't even want more than two people in there because I'd start to get fucking crazy. Like, oh, where are they? You know, where is he ashing? Where is he, that, you know, like that whole thing where when I was, if I had drinks in it, it would be like, yeah, you could put that out on my fucking forehead. Like you could fucking throw cigarettes on my floor. Like I don't, you know, you just, it's crazy how it all fucking works.
Who's Robert Eiler today?
I go to the gym 5 days a week. I eat, super clean, more reliable, you know, like I used to be. Like, I remember there were things for my family just not showing up.
When you're addicted, you have no... When I was addicted, yeah. I was not... I could tell you I'll be there Friday. Good luck.
Right.
I don't know how I'm going to feel or what's going to happen Thursday night. So there's no... I've told Lee 1,000 times. If I was still doing coke, this podcast would not be intact because there's just no way. You can't control your life.
Yeah. And there was no...
You don't know what direction you're going to go.
And then Friday, you'd want to do it. And then fucking Monday, you'd hate it. Yeah. You know, you'd be like, I don't want to fucking be sitting in that room and that, or like you fucking have, it's just.
Do you want to act today? How do you feel about it, or you're done?
I don't enjoy I hate fucking reading scripts. I hate auditioning. I hate that whole part of it. So it's like, I thought for a long time I was passionate about acting, but really I was passionate about doing Sopranos. I loved it. I stopped fucking drinking for it. I stopped doing drugs, like whatever. When that time would come, and it was never like, fuck, I gotta stop this. It was like, no, this is how it works. Like, I get to do this. Like, I loved doing that work. I loved hanging out with those guys. I loved all of it. Where now, like, the idea of, like, some agent is gonna send you fucking four scripts, and you're gonna sit in your apartment and fucking read them, and maybe, like, where it's, and, like, I don't want to do a TV show because I don't like the, what they might tell you you're doing in a year. It was totally unpredictable, where it's like, I have all of these, like, things I don't, you know, if they were like, you're gonna be fucking smoking, or you're gonna be fucking, you know, smoking a cigarette, or we want you to eat this, and I don't want to be a difficult guy who's like, hey, actually I don't eat that anymore, I won't smoke a cigarette, I don't want to be fucking doing this and that. So that's like, I love fucking you, I love Joe Rogan, I love the fucking Bobby Lee, Tom Segura. So that's, I moved out here to start a podcast, and hopefully that'll be the thing that I'm doing.
First off, I gotta be honest with you. How the fuck do you follow The Sopranos?
Oh, it's crazy.
How do you go into a CBS show today and fucking bumfuck Johnny Director comes up to you and says, for this thing, how it's, you worked with the best.
Yep.
You came from an environment that was healthy. Listen, last, not ashamed to say this, about 2 years ago, I did two episodes of a show for Greg Garcia. First one was great. I walked in, I was the second scene up, and I left. The second time I went to shoot the same show, I had the first scene up and basically the last scene at 10 o'clock at night. So you're there from 9 in the morning, you do your 1 hour, and then you wait. Being in that room with no windows made me crazy. I love Greg, and I acted like a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And when I left there that night, I went home, and I blamed it on the anxiety and the no windows. But really what it was like, I just don't think I want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
When I got the call for the Soprano movie, and I put the audition on tape, I didn't think about it again. When they called and made the offer, I was thinking about not taking it. Like
Tom, I heard you talk about it, yeah.
Tom Papa had to come in and say, take the fucking thing. When I was there, just being, after the first day of watching what David Chase was about, like I was trying to improvise.
Yeah.
And somebody came over and they're like, knock it off.
Yeah.
And I remember there's all this air, you know. That's when it all came to me. I left there, went right back to the room, rolled the three joints, went outside, smoked one. And I think I worked a day, and then I had like 4 days off. For those 4 days, I just immersed myself with the episodes just to see his style.
Yeah.
And the second day I went in there, I was like, now I'm ready mentally for David Chase. This is something that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I've been a comic for years. You know, I've worked with some great directors. At that moment, he blew everybody out. Once I saw what he did that first scene I shot,
yep.
I was like, I'm paying attention to this guy to the fucking letter from now on. If he says sneeze, I will sneeze, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't eat nothing in that movie either, by the way, because right. I hate that shit too.
Yeah.
They asked me to smoke a cigar. I think I smoked one of them, but once, like right now, somebody offered me a mob movie a few weeks ago, and I was like, no.
But see, what the thing is a lot of what people don't understand in this industry is like, if you're putting all of your shit aside, all the shit you want to do, or how I really want to be, and I got to fucking focus on this thing, and I got to what, but you know it's something that you think is going to be fucking incredible, it's different than trying to put your whole fucking life aside, changing the person you are, everything, for some show that might be okay.
And while you're shooting it, you're like, nobody watches this shit. Yeah. When they come up to you and go, excuse me, when the scriptee comes up to you and says, hi, right. Hi, the word is the instead of a, and you're like,
yeah.
Does it really matter? You gotta be retarded to watch this fucking show. Well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, who gives a fuck between the and a?
And what was great about Sopranos with us is, you know, by season 4 or 5, people would be like, how did you prepare to go? Dude, it's like, you walk into the Sopranos kitchen and you see Jim pacing and sweating, and you see Edie banging her nail. You know, she had those fake nails and she'd be banging them on the fucking counter. That's it. You're there. You know, we're like, we were a fucking, some sort of a family. You know, as soon as you went back in, it was all the things were there. There was the place where you sat and you had your thing. And like, they never told us any of that stuff. Like, you got to stay this, you got to stay on script, you have to do this. But we would see it when other people would come in. You know, so we would hear, you know, like we would do something off and nobody would say anything, but then they would make like one word wrong and somebody would come over to them. And then we would find out later, like you know, you're sitting around, you're having a drink, and they go, oh yeah, they told me, like, you know, I said this instead of that or that instead of that. And then you're going, man, not only am I getting paid to fucking work on the best show ever, but I also have some sort of fucking seniority where these people, like, I could fucking... They don't come up to you and tell you, hey, you know, you fucked it. Like, of course, the director would come up to you and give you direction and tell you shit. But nobody ever said, hey, you put the fucking, you said the instead of then. But they would say it to fucking other people, you know? And you see that a lot. You see people come in for 3 days and they're fucking shaking and people are all nervous. Like, oh, we heard that people are real strict around here. And then we would tell them, nah, nobody's fucking strict around here. Everybody's cool. So then they'd get all loose and people would come over, you know, and be like, hey, you said... the instead of then, and they look at us like, I thought you said, and we'd be like, hey, I don't, you know, we can, yeah, it's fucking, crazy. Yeah, it's nuts.
What did you learn from Jim?
So much, you know, I mean, just from the acting that I learned from watching him, you know, because I've talked about it before where, like, I don't think I was ever a great actor, but I think the actor I was from season one until the end, I think I did grow.
Yes, you grew dramatically.
Yeah, thank you.
You grew dramatically.
And I think it was from James and Edie watching them. I mean, it was like, I felt like I was watching the two, like, greatest actors I've ever seen all the time. Like, you just show up and you see what they do and you see why they do certain things and how they, like, you know, like, it would be more so like, you'd watch Edie and then she'd fucking come by and in the scene she would just come and like rub her nails on my back or like something like that, and it would be those things where I go, oh shit, that's she was there, she wasn't what's the next fucking line or where do I put this down, she saw the fucking look on my face and felt like she needed to put her fucking, you know, nails on my back and let me know the thing. It's great. But really what I learned from him also, I think in LA especially, or there's a lot of like this outward like, we support whatever, you know, we support your decision too, and standing from the fucking rooftop and screaming how good of a person you are and what you support. And I don't remember if it was Jim had passed away already or what, but I remember my manager coming up to me and telling me, like, you know, he calls me. And I'm like, for what do you mean he calls you? And he's like, he calls me and he tells me not to tell you that he calls me, but he asks how you're doing, what type of people you're hanging out with, what you're paying for fucking rent, like to make sure that you're not, you know, spending fucking 10 grand on some penthouse in New York City being an asshole. And he wants to know all this stuff about you. And he told me not to tell you. And I think that's the opposite of a lot of like this bullshit of like, we love each other. And, you know, there were never like, you know, like you see now Instagram and this shit of like, we're so close and we're so the.
R.I.P. John Witherspoon.
Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck? And that's the thing is like, there would be fucking some people from there was a thing that you felt on the show where it's like, you know why the reason is nobody's a fucking asshole on set. Nobody's an asshole on the show. Because if you are, David can kill you. David could end it all. You want to come in and act like you're a fucking big shot because you won some fucking award last year, or people are telling you your character is the best. Your character is the best, and you want to come in and request some kind of fucking trailer or that. It's like somebody will put fucking two bullets in your head in the fucking show, and you're not on the show anymore. So nobody ever. If anything, we'd all be in fucking one person's camper, you know, sitting around laughing. There was no. And I think a lot of that was also Jim. Jim never let it. If anybody's going to be asking for shit, it's him. And he never did. He never said, hey, I want this or this thing. So everybody kind of, you know, you follow the vibe on the show.
He's an example.
Yeah, he's for sure. Example.
And I got to tell you something about Edie. I always knew Edie was a good actress. But when I saw her as a dangerous action actress, was when Jim got shot. That scene when she's crying in the hallway, she takes you there.
She's unbelievable.
She fucking took me there. She took me there. Like, yeah. Like I know. It's like when Sean Penn, when he finds out his daughter's dead in that movie. What's that?
Mystic River? Yeah.
The noise he makes, that's somebody who lost somebody. That's a tough recreation noise to make. You know, Edie had her moments. I think... And I could say this. Listen, I miss Charles Bronson. Look at that picture. Look at him. The second guy I miss is James Gandolfini. Never met him.
Yeah.
Never met him. And I could tell you that I miss him on TV. That movie he made with Hardy towards the end.
Okay, The Game, was that
The Game
it?
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him there and going, how much do I fucking miss him from The Sopranos? Like, The Sopranos could have still kept going. And I think it would have lost no fans.
Yeah.
You know, you were on one of the greatest TV shows of all time. I mean, not no bullshit fucking Friends or fucking... I'm talking about a show that changed the fabric of society. You know, Ricky and fucking Desi type shit. Whatever his name is. Desi and Lucy
type shit.
You know.
I didn't have HBO growing up, and I remember the night that the finale aired, I literally heard, I was living in Boston. What year did the finale air?
10 years after, so I guess 2009?
Yep, I was living in Boston, and I knew my friends were watching it. I heard people, when it went black, I heard people go, ah! Like, I literally heard people. I'll never forget that.
They thought the cable went out. A lot of people thought the cable went out.
And I was like, what is going on? Yeah. I'll never forget that. I was like, what? Sure. And then I went on Facebook, and I was like, oh, shit. And then the thing I wanted to ask you was, because it happens a lot, but like you went from a kid, and then towards the end of the show, because I watched it later, you weren't like your character was not the most liked character
at all. Yeah,
what is that like? Did people like start hating you, or did people have a weird reaction to you when you were like not as much of like a, oh, he's not that little kid anymore? Like,
you know what's funny? I feel like that's more like an online culture thing where people are like, fuck you, you suck. Like, walking around in New York City, nobody ever fucking says that shit. You know, nobody, people are just happy to see you and they want to tell you they love the show and this. So, like, I mean, there were definitely people who would tell me, like, man, I fucking hate your character. And I'm like, yeah. And especially people who would meet me, like, hanging out and partying, they'd be like, man, I hate your character, but you're fucking nothing like that, you know, piece of shit or that little fucking nerd or whatever. But I remember like doing interviews and saying, I get it because I see it. Like, I want to smack him in the face sometimes. Like, I want to fucking grab him and be like, what are you, you know, like, you fuck. But that's right. That's the whole fucking point of, you know, that's what people want to, that's the shit that, you know, that Tony sees in himself that he fucking hates about himself, you know, that fucking.
You had some great scenes, Robert. The scene when she gets hammered and he brings her back, and you're like, go upstairs, AJ, and you're like, she's doing ecstasy, but I gotta go upstairs. He chases you up when you put the fucking thing under the crook of your arm when you were gonna go to the military academy, and you had to come down.
Hat.
Oh, you sold it. Robert, you sold me. You're like, you had this look on your face like you wanted to fucking shoot yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You sold it. There was so many scenes when you went after, you know, Corrado, when you went after him,
Uncle Junior,
when he
yeah.
caught you outside.
Yeah.
That was a fucking tremendous scene with you and Jim when he told you about, you know, you always say you're a hypocrite. Fucking Michael.
You know what's funny? It's crazy that you brought that up. That's the only scene I ever felt I did good.
That is a beautiful scene.
That's Jim. The only scene I ever fucking.
Oh, no. That was like,
yeah.
You know, you were seasoned by then and you were used to him, but that was a beautiful scene. That was a real father and son scene. But you had all when you're changing the flat. That's a fucking great scene.
I don't remember.
And
that.
He goes, AJ, you loved your Uncle Jackie or some shit. And then he goes, what do you know about me? And you were like hesitant. You were like, I don't know, whatever the kids say. It was the.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, he's changing the flat and he's like drying his sweat off and you're just a little kid. And he goes, AJ, what do you know about me? And you're like, I don't know. It's his Uncle Jackie's stole money from the unions or something like that. He goes, you know, your Uncle Jackie loved you. Like, all those scenes, you right. sold. Robert, you sold.
Thank you, yeah.
That, oh, the crack hoe. Oh, that's a crack hoe.
Right, right.
And you hit the black neighborhood yeah. and that. All those scenes, you know, even Jamie Lynn.
Yeah, Jamie's fucking great.
When they went up to Booten and he fucking chokes the guy
okay.
and he's talking to her in the car and he's like, you know what I do? And it was if you've noticed, I'm surprised that they even did The Irishman, because
I haven't seen it yet. You saw it?
No. Not yet, because
3.5 hours.
I know,
it's 3 hours. Yeah, it's good for your asshole
yeah.
to sit there once in a while, you know what I'm saying? But it was such a show that covered so many, like, the mob world could never recover again. The mafia genre and movies never really took off again for 10 years.
Well, now, it's hard to, when we had 10 years to develop a character, it's hard to then have to do it in fucking 2 hours. You know, when you're fucking, when you've been watching a show for fucking 5 years and then that 6 seasons coming on and you got everybody in the fucking living room and the static from the HBO comes up, it's hard to recreate that, because how do you get people excited to walk it, to turn on the fucking TV? You know, now everybody's so fucking, everybody's a critic, thumbs up, thumbs down. I like that. I don't like that. There was not, if you don't like the show, get the fuck out of the room. That's how Sopranos was. It was like, we're going to watch Sopranos. If you don't like it, get the fuck out. There wasn't no, you know, oh, I know I'm giving it fucking four tomatoes or whatever people Rotten are fucking. Tomatoes. Yeah, it's like people were just, and that was the thing. It's like, I think a lot of people in Jersey just fucking loved it for what it was. You know, there was this book I was fucking reading about, The Mastery of Love, and it talks about, I'm reading a lot of these books now because I'm all fucking, you know, I'm trying to get my life together and be a fucking adult and care about people. And the, what it says is like, you know, it's like, let's say you say like, I love New York. When you think about New York, you love it and that's it. You don't try and fucking change it, you know, where with people you go, yeah, I like that person, but they fucking, you know, they do this. I don't like that. It's like, you just have to fucking accept it. And I think that's what people in fucking Jersey did. They were just, they didn't go, oh, well, I like it, but, you know, he wouldn't wear his hat like that. It was just, we love this show. We're all in. They never came up with the, like, I feel like now these fucking movies are made and every fucking person on the internet is like, you in that third scene, they shouldn't have ended it that way. I mean, obviously some people hated the ending of Sopranos, but besides that, I never heard anybody come up to me and try and fucking critique it or say, you know, how come, why didn't they do it this way or that? People just, I love the show. You know, that's what people would say.
Two of the shows that spawned from the Sopranos were Breaking Bad, obviously, and Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
There's a thread that somebody sent me one time about Sons of Anarchy because Jax Teller wears sneakers.
Right.
He wears white sneakers. Bikers fucking hated it.
Well, somebody came up to James Gandolfini, who was a legit fucking, but like, we'd meet these guys all the time who'd come up to you and go, hey, you know, what you do on that show, that's what I do in real life. I mean, so you've made it to fucking 40 by going around telling people you don't know that, like us, like you just fucking really, you know? So you meet a lot of people who pretend to fucking do whatever, but Jim met one guy who was legit and he didn't say any, I'm doing it. He came over to him and he goes, hey, he goes, wise guy. He goes, he'd never wear shorts. Don't do that. Don't wear the shorts. And then I remember Jim went to David and told him. He's like, I felt what this guy was saying, you know?
And then Carmine Lupatazzi went to James, Tony.
On the show?
And he goes, I heard that John went up to the house for a barbecue last week. And he goes, yeah, why? He goes, a boss never wears shorts. And he turns around. And James is like, what the fuck is he saying? You know?
Yeah, because so David would take shit. You know, like David's a fucking genius. He doesn't need me to do anything. But there were times in your life where you'd show up and there was a time where I was crazy about like Slayer and Pantera and just fucking smoking weed and listening to heavy metal and going to concerts. And then the next episode, I was fucking skateboarding, listening to fucking Pantera and this. And it was like, you know, so he would take shit from his own life, but also from fucking hanging out with it. Like there was shit that he took from Tony Sirico that like if you watch Tony Sirico for fucking 3 days, you're coming up with stuff. You know, like we would go away on a trip with Tony Sirico for 3 days and he would come up to us on red carpets and he would have a travel bottle of Obsession. He always smelled like Obsession and he would pour it in his hand and then smack you like on the face on both sides and you would just fucking reek the entire night people, you know, you're meeting celebrities and they're coming to give you a hug or a kiss and they're like, geez, this fucking guy smells like a fucking bottle of cologne. And then actresses would also come up to us and tell us he hugged me and I smelled like him for the rest of the night, you know, because and there was so much shit that he like. I remember one time we were doing I think the DVDs were coming out and like The Wiz wanted us to sign DVDs. So the first couple of people come up. And the guy's talking to me, you know, oh, how are you? How's the show? Blah, blah, blah. He's talking to me for like 5 minutes or whatever. And there's a line of fucking hundreds of people. But I'm not going to tell this guy like, hey, you can't talk. We got to do all these people. So I just sit there and I answer his questions or whatever. And he walks away and Tony Sirico fucking puts his hand up to the guy who's sending people our way. And he puts his hand up and he looks at me. He goes, Robert, sign them and send them. He goes, that's it. And he would do shit. He had these one-liners all the time that if you just stayed around him enough, the shit that he would say. And I know there's got to be, I didn't watch the show, so I don't know what Paulie Walnut says on the show, but I guarantee you there's a percentage of that shit that just when David would be around Tony Sirico, because you'd hear him say stuff and it was fucking hilarious. He was unbelievable. He came to my fucking confirmation in real life in the fucking, what is that, three-breasted fucking double-breasted Armani, suit with the whole, the hair fucking slicked back with an envelope full of money. Like there was no It was crazy, man. We were, and people who were in my family were at my confirmation, and they're like, that's Paulie Walnuts. You know, nobody's going, oh my God, there's fucking Tony. They're like, there's fucking Paulie Walnuts. And then you had people who were the opposite of who they were on the show, like fucking Edie. You know, you meet Edie somewhere and she's just like super just nice woman with her dog, and she's like really friendly and understanding.
Really friendly, yeah.
Yeah, and just so like sweet and this. And then she'd go into the hair and makeup camper and come out to whatever hours later with the fucking long nails and the big hair and the Armani fucking matching outfit with the gold chains. And you're like, holy shit, that's the op. Like Tony Sirico wouldn't let people do his hair. He came with his own shit done. He wouldn't sit. He would sit in that hair makeup chair like there was someone new. He'd be like, there's a rule in this place. You don't touch this, and point at his hair. He's like, you don't fucking touch my hair. You know, it was crazy. It wasn't like you said, it was like, if I don't know what my life would have been like now if I did got some fucking like Disney show when I was 11 I don't know.
Yeah.
Because people meet me and Jamie sometimes together and they're like, God, what was it like? It must have been so crazy. And then it's like, the cool part was we lived our life, because no fucking 15-year-old knew what Sopranos was. I could go fucking walk around and hang out with people my age all day. Nobody would say a fucking word. Nobody said anything. And then as soon as we'd go to a fucking store, and then somebody would be like, hey, aren't you? You're over there on the fucking cover of the fucking TV guide. And you're just like, eh, you know, yeah, let's go back to the fucking,
it was fucking surreal, park. Robert.
And sometimes I still can't, you know, that I'm like, we got paid to be on what people say is the fucking best show. There's times where I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I just think about how fucking grateful I am for it, and how, you know, I told you when we spoke on the phone last night, I there's no doubt in my mind David Chase saved my life. There's no doubt in my mind. Because I know the first time I took a fucking Percocet what it felt like. And if I didn't have, when I quit doing fucking drugs and all that shit, if I didn't have this on the other side, if I didn't have, like, I fucking just moved out to LA, started a podcast, I got a fucking apartment, I did all this stuff because Sopranos, you know? It's like all this freedom that I have and this kind of thing where it's like, if I didn't have that, if I had my fucking grandfather's job, and I don't know. I don't think it'd be good. I could be wrong, but I know. You know, there's times where you're fucking taking 15 Percocets a day and somebody fucking who's giving you those Percocets goes, you know, heroin is fucking a lot cheaper and it's not as bad. But I would go, well, I got checks coming in, you know, I'll stick with the fucking Percocets, thanks. Where, who knows what would have happened if fucking, you know, if I was fucking 18 and had my grandfather's job or fucking whatever, I dropped out of school and fucking hated my life, and somebody said, hey, you know, heroin's fucking cheaper. I might have been like, yeah, well, I only got fucking 10 bucks on me, so I guess that's what we're doing tonight. And I might not. I have no idea, but I just...
What's the name of the podcast?
It's called Pajama Pants.
And it's you and Jamie.
Me, Jamie Lynn, and our friend Kasim. And I just want it to be like this. I want it to be shit you talk about in fucking pajama pants, your pajamas, and fucking sitting around and laughing and telling old stories, making new stories, and just... We're about 10 episodes in, and I'm so fucking happy to be doing it, because it's like, I found in later years with me and Jamie, we always kept in touch, but every time we would see each other, it would be catching up, you know? And then by the time you're done fucking catching up with somebody, and then you leave, and then you see them a month or 3 months later, and then you're catching up again. So it's so nice to see, guaranteed to see, like, I went to her house last Sunday to watch football, and like, we're hanging out and stuff, but to guarantee every week, I know I'm going to see her for an hour or however long we fucking talk for and bullshit, and we could really get back into each other's lives. Like, I was living in New York, then I moved to Vegas, and she was always out here, and she's got her kids and everything, and like, we're like a family, you know? She's like a sister to me, and her not being in my life, I felt like something was missing, and it's great to have her back in, and it's also great to be telling her these kind of stories, because there's a lot of them that she doesn't know, because she's so innocent and so fucking amazing and sweet and pure that I would never tell her, like, back in the day, like, yeah, I'm on fucking day three of fucking doing blow in some place with fucking garbage bags on the windows, and I, you know, we haven't let, I would just say to her, like, yeah, you know, I've been partying a little, you know, like, nothing. I didn't want her to feel bad. I didn't want to put anything in her head. So now when I sit and we have microphones and I fucking tell her these stories and we get her real reactions for the first time, and we're just, there's a little bit of therapy in it. There's fucking great catching up. We just laughing. It's everything. And then it's like, we had like Drea De Matteo on. So it's like getting to catch up with her and talk about the fucking Soprano stories and this, but then just, you know, there's some episodes where we go 30 minutes without mentioning Sopranos at all. It's just, it's all, I love it. I'm so happy I moved here, and I hope this is like the next chapter in my life. You know, I hope that's, you know, when you say like, who are you now? I hope it's a healthy guy who's moving in the right direction and has a fucking podcast. That's, you know, that'll be keeping me going. Cause like I said to you, it's, people tell you, you gotta do something creative. You gotta do something creative. And you're living in New York, and you're like, walking down the street, going to the deli, ordering a coffee, then going to meet my friend in fucking Washington Square Park, and then you walk in here, and then going taking a fucking boxing class. And then I don't feel anything's fucking missing. And then I lived in Vegas for 2 years, and I felt like my fucking, all of my organs were out of my fucking butt. Like, I was like, I just felt like I was, again, maybe that piece of fucking lint floating in the air. Like, I was just like, man, there's, and I would meet people at the poker table who never, didn't know Sopranos, anything, and they would just hear me fucking talking to somebody and they'd be like, oh man, you should fucking write a book, or, you know, you should do so. So like, it pushed me back into thinking like, yeah, I do have to do something creative, because it also gives me, there is a part of my life that I feel like is missing when I'm not doing it, you know. And you go, and Vegas was just, you know, I took up gambling for a long time, and the last 10 years, basically, all I've been doing is playing poker, and I fucking loved it. And I hit a wall. I got to the point where I was like, I can't go sit at a table with 8 strangers every day anymore. Like, now that I'm so, like, I used to just take Percocets, and you could fucking, right, you sit anywhere, you, yeah, know? I could sit on a fucking tarmac in a plane for 6 hours, and people would be like, oh, we gotta get off this plane. And I'd be like, why? You know, or fucking, it'd be the same as I'm sitting in my lip. But, when, now that I'm sober, and when I'm sitting on that fucking, in that table with 8 strangers, and they're talking about stupid shit, that makes me want to fucking flip the table over. And by the way, one day it's fine, but when it's your life and you're going, all right, it's fucking Monday, it's time to go play poker, and then you're like, oh my god, I gotta go sit with these guys for fucking 8 hours, and it's just torture. And I stopped enjoying the game. I stopped studying. Like, I was always studying poker, and I was part of these like poker academies, and I was really fucking into it, and I loved doing it, and I was making money in this, and I just saw it all falling away, because I couldn't handle being around these people every day. And it's like why I don't want to do a TV show, because it's unknown, you know. I'm going to sit at a table with 8 people. I don't know what the fuck they're gonna be talking about. I don't know, some people are fucking, it's just you hearing the same stories over and over, and the same kinds of people, and they're talking about their night last night in Vegas, and I just hit a wall, you know. So I called up Jamie, and I called up my friend Kasim, and hopefully this is the next chapter of my life.
Oh man, you got an open fucking door here. Anytime you want to come up and talk, thank shit, you, your family here.
Yeah, you're the first person to have me on their podcast, man, since I got, so I'm, up. I really appreciate you having me.
I'll call Segura for you.
Thank
know,
you.
If you want, or whatever.
I would love
want.
That.
You know, if you want to stop by the Improv tomorrow night and say hello to Joe.
For sure,
I
yeah.
know he'd love to shake your hand.
That's awesome,
the fuck
yeah.
you want to do. But yeah, man, I'm a big fan. I'm happy thank you. That you got your life together. Listen, you're on the best show of all fucking time. You made your mark, and you're like Tony Montana. You made your mark, and you enforced it.
Yeah.
So let me read some ads. Do not forget.
Thanks again, man.
Miami sold out, but Town Hall, December 6th, they added a second show, and I still got motherfucking tickets. Real quick, let me ask you something. We're in the middle of football season, all right? You like winning money? You like betting sports? I'll tell you where I put my money down. You ready? MyBookie.ag. If you're trying to bet on the NFL, MMA, UFC, Chinese ping pong, whatever the fuck, MyBookie's got it. They got the better incentives and more lines than any other sports book, period. I've told you once, I'll tell you again. This year, they're running a super contest. $100 to enter. You pick 5 teams a week against the spread. You rack up the points. First place is guaranteed. $100,000, all right? They just revamped the site, and it's looking fucking tip-top Magoo. So go take a look if you haven't already. And listen, it's Tuesday. Cut the shit. We're going to double your first deposit right now. You're like, Joey, what's that? If you put in a nickel, we give you a nickel. Use promo code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H, to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. So go to mybookie.ag today, bitches. That's my bookie, MyBookie.ag, and use promo code CHURCH. My bookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Listen, if you're still wearing those fucking socks from Kmart and those other dumpy fucking places with holes, you're making a big fucking mistake. All right? Stan socks are here to rock your fucking Christmas. Incredible design and comfort, unique styles you can't get anywhere else. And if you want to show a little love to yourself or the people in your life, give them the Stance. Now, when you show a little ankle, you're also showing off what makes you special. Whatever you're into, they collaborate with the best of them. Star Wars socks, Harley Davidson socks. They even got Grateful Dead fucking socks, and they're clean. They're not like fucking dirty Grateful Dead socks, just designs. So every football, baseball, and basketball team, you got that on there too. Stan socks are incredibly comfortable. I got them on my feet. I'm on my feet a lot, and like I told you in the beginning, when I fly, I put these motherfuckers on. I got the Icon socks for myself. And for my wife, I got some cute little ankle socks that she likes. And I even got the Flying Juice, some nice blue socks that say good vibes just to remind them of what's important in life, cocksucker. So do me a favor. Stance makes a great gift. Right now, for the church family, Stance has a great offer. Go to stance.com/church, and they're going to throw in a free pair of socks with any purchase. Trust me, you're going to love these fucking socks. They're nice and comfortable. Tremendous. Like I said, I use them when I fly, when I got to walk around airports, and it just is. It makes my feet feel fucking tremendous. That's stance.com, stance.com/church to get your free pair of socks. Because if they're not Stance, they're not socks. I want to thank Stance. I want to thank my bookie. I want to thank my main man, Robert Isla. I want to thank the Christ Killer, but most importantly, I want to thank you cocksuckers for always having my back and the whole thing. Do not forget, December 6th, 10:30, tickets still available. And that's it, and that's that. I want to thank you again, brother. You're
Thanks
a fucking
for having
G.
Me. Thank you.
I want to thank you again, my little savage. And like I said, most importantly, you motherfuckers at the house. See you Thursday morning, Tip Top Magoo. Stay black. Kick that fucking muley. You don't...
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet. As I sit there applauding from a front row seat, when somebody breaks your heart like you.